It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three, and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, P.J. Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Ridge.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now for today's episode, we've got a little bit of it's kind of breaking news about the kind of head coaching searches going around the NBA. So I want to touch on that. I want to talk about kind of where I think some of these guys may end up coaching: Doc Rivers, Mike D'Antoni, Ty Lue, the Rockets head coaching candidates, obviously. I want to talk about that. Also would like to discuss game one of the NBA Finals. That is in the books. The Miami Heat were destroyed by the LA Lakers and suffered a just carousel of injuries to their cast of players. Goran Dragic, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, everybody was hurt on Miami, basically. Just about the most disastrous game one as disastrous of a game one as you could get if you're Miami, unfortunately. And that really sucks, because I was looking forward to a really competitive finals between those two teams. And it kind of looked like it was going to be a competitive finals, midway through that first quarter, with Miami taking a significant lead early. You know, I think it was like a 13-point lead early. And then Lakers kind of bounced back from that pretty hard. And then final segment, I want to get in our very first voicemail message from the call-in line. So remember, we added that call-in line now. So if you want to call into the show, leave a message, leave a topic for discussion, you can do that 713-487-5457. So we'll get to that topic in the final segment here in today's show. But first things first, let's get in on this coaching update search for the Houston Rockets and kind of how the other vacancies affect this. So basically, the news broke last night by, I believe it was Adrian Wojnarowski, right before tip-off of game one of the NBA Finals, that Doc Rivers was actually with the Philadelphia 76ers brass and discussing the possibility of him taking over the head coaching position, and that he was actually getting ready to sit down and basically watch game one with them. So just casually, like, with the Philadelphia 76ers top brass, just hanging out, watching the game, and that the expectation was that there was going to be an offer made either during the game or sometime thereafter the game. I kind of am looking at this as, and this is also based off of what Matt Bullard had to say about Mike D'Antoni and kind of where he thinks he's going to end up. He mentioned that he thinks the 76ers job is Mike's to lose, and I think D'Antoni was probably the lead candidate for the 76ers until Doc Rivers became available on the coaching market. So with that being said, I think that it looks like the 76ers are really going guns blazing, trying to get Doc Rivers, and I think they're going to make him that offer, and it just kind of looks like Doc is going to take it. I think that's their new leading candidate. That's the direction they're trying to go in. And then that kind of ties back into also what Matt said about the Indiana Pacers front office and how much they really want Mike D'Antoni. And that may have been Mike's like second choice as a team. And there's also the issue of the LA Clippers now and how they have that head coaching spot open. And some people have speculated, well, what if Mike D'Antoni went there? It was broken by the LA Clippers beat reporter for The Athletic. And I don't want to butcher his name. I think it's Johan Boeven. I think that's how it's said. I apologize. I didn't look up how to say it before I came in here. But the news was broken by him. I saw this on social media that basically the Clippers are looking to bring in their own version of Nick Nurse. They're looking to bring in, you know, potentially a version of Nick Nurse or Steve Kerr, kind of a first-year head coach, you know, somebody from within the organization to give them kind of a chance to, you know, invigorate, jolt their team. Similarly to kind of what we're hoping for the Rockets is bringing in that tactician-style coach, somebody who is basically new on the scene, but just because you're new on the scene doesn't make you a bad coach. It makes you a new coach, absolutely. But, you know, somebody with new ideas and a new vision for a direction of the organization. Now, for the Rockets angle, that's probably not going to be completely true because the direction of the organization is still going to be backed by analytics. It's still going to be, you know, Daryl Morey and company making the decisions about how this game is really played. But whoever they do bring in as head coach is going to be somebody who can both embrace that style and bring a bit of their own style, I think, to the system. So for the Clippers, I don't see them going Mike D'Antoni. I think where my head is kind of at right now is Doc Rivers to the 76ers, Mike D'Antoni to the Indiana Pacers, and I would honestly, it doesn't sound like the Clippers want Ty Lue as their head coach. It just doesn't. So I would peg Ty Lue to go to one of those other team openings, so potentially like the Pelicans maybe, although he hasn't been tied to the Pelicans, but that is a vacancy that would be interesting for him. It's a really strong up-and-coming team. The Rockets, you know, Ty Lue's been mentioned as a potential candidate for the Rockets, but the Rockets are also interviewing lead assistant coaches like Wes Unseld Jr. and Steven Silas from other organizations, so it's kind of interesting for the Rockets standpoint where if they bring in somebody, I'm still of the opinion that they need to bring in a defensive-minded guy or somebody that can really hone in on the defense. And I think that, you know, if you bring in, obviously Jeff Van Gundy's name has been mentioned. I was kind of high on the idea of Jeff Van Gundy at first because I really liked the idea of a coach who could come in and really focus on the defense, because I think your floor with James Harden and Russell Westbrook on the same damn team, your floor is probably a top five, top seven offense at worst with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. So the issue will always be about how good can you make the defense. And so to me, bringing in a coach that can really revitalize that side of the game for this Houston Rockets team is the key. I do think that Sam Cassell would be interesting still as an option, and I'm still kind of pulling for Cassell because I think with him and then an experienced lead assistant, that would be a really interesting dynamic duo, somebody that could command the respect of both James Harden and Russell Westbrook, somebody who's been around the game for decades, who really understands the game and pretty much understands the importance of both sides of basketball. It wouldn't be necessarily one or the other. Cassell's not coming in with a resume that says, oh, he's an offensive guy or he's a defensive guy. He's just coming in as a smart basketball player, a qualified, assistant who's been a lead assistant or, you know, a top tier assistant, for both the Wizards and the Clippers now for a number of years. And like Matt Bullard has said, and I'm in agreement with him, really deserves a shot at being a head coach somewhere now. So the Clippers, I'm not really sure what direction they're going to go for their head coach, but I don't think it's going to be Ty Lue, and I don't think they're going to tap Sam Cassell for it. I've got MDA in Pacerland. I've got Doc Rivers for the 76ers. And for the Rockets, I'm still leaning Sam Cassell, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did go, more of a standout name. Again, a Ty Lue or a JVG type candidate. But it'll be interesting once we see those other dominoes start to fall to see where the Rockets kind of go. And Steven Silas, that's another guy that is really interesting because he's not necessarily a Mike D'Antoni clone per se. And if he's picked up some things from Rick Carlisle up there in South Oklahoma, that would be an interesting addition because he'd be, again, just like Sam Cassell, a first-time, full-time head coach. And you know, the Mavericks had the best offense in NBA history this past season. Now, granted, there is a potential for that offense to have maybe tapered off a little bit had the season actually resumed course and finished in its entirety rather than being abruptly halted because of COVID-19. So there's a possibility that they wouldn't have had the best offense in history, but they had a really amazing offense. And at its core, all the NBA offenses, every offense in the league wants to generate those easy shots. They want to generate shots at the rim. They want to generate those corner three-pointers. It's just all about the philosophy of how you go about doing that. And I want to talk about that a little bit in this next segment after a quick message from our friends over at DoorDash. Between never-ending laundry cycles and incoming emails, you've got plenty on your to-do list. Give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. And that means you'll be able to continue supporting the restaurants in your community safely, because there are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. So remember, that's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Locked On NBA. It's easy. You just open the app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with their new contactless delivery drop-off setting. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food that you're craving right now, right to your door. So don't forget, that's code Locked On NBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Reminder, if you want to call in, because we're about to do this in segment three, if you want to call in and have your voice played on this show, if you want to be the topic of discussion, if you want to generate a discussion with me, then call in 713-487-5457. We'll get to doing that in the third segment. But right now, I do want to tackle, it's a two-part thing. And this, what I said before about leading into kind of offensive philosophies in the NBA, leads into what I want to talk about in this segment specifically about some nuances of what I saw in game one of the Lakers Heat final series. So first, my main thing is, one, the Heat got slaughtered, unfortunately. It was a really rough game. I was really pulling for the Heat. Look, I am a huge fan of the Heat culture, how they're playing basketball, how they've really been resilient throughout this entire season, their playoff push so far to this point. And I think Bam Adebayo is one of the most fun players to watch in the entire NBA. I've only ever bought Rockets jerseys, right? Like, I've bought Rockets jerseys. I own an Altuve jersey. I don't own any Texans jerseys, and for good reason. I need them to give me a reason to buy a Texans jersey. And I've only ever bought two non-Houston sports jerseys, right? And the first was a throwback Phoenix Suns Steve Nash jersey, and I bought it for a friend, not even for myself. And recently, this is the first purchase that I've ever made for myself that was not a Rockets jersey. I bought a Miami Heat Bam Adebayo Vice City jersey because I am such a fan of the way he plays the game and how creative he is as a big with passing, his ability to handle the ball. He is a Swiss Army knife on the basketball court. And then defensively, the fact that he anchors the Miami Heat defense is just beautiful. Watching them, you know, when they're in their zone sets and how much of a presence he has and how aware he is about where he needs to be for his rotations and all that stuff, he's just an exciting player to play. If you haven't checked out the Miami Heat, do it and then focus in on Bam Adebayo. He is just really good, and I'm excited to see where his career takes him, you know, throughout his NBA journey. But now that that's out of the way, now that I've gotten my Bam fandom out of the way, this game, you know, the Heat came out, had a really strong start, and then the Lakers just kind of bounced back because they got into what they want to do, which is, you know, with their, you know, athletic, you know, bigs who have the ability to run the floor better than most bigs in the league, especially with Anthony Davis, and JVG kind of highlighted this. Anthony Davis was able to leak out and transition quite a bit. And when he does that, he forces mismatches because somebody has to pick up AD in transition. And if you can't get your optimal defender on AD, then he takes advantage of that person, you know, on the way down the court or just in general playing in transition. The Lakers, you know, do a really great job of getting out in transition. One, because they're a really great defensive team, so they're able to force a lot of, you know, turnovers, force a lot of stops. And then they're excellent about actually getting out and running and getting those easy attempts in transition before, you know, the Miami Heat were able to get their defense set. And we saw a lot of that, you know, as Houston Rockets fans. We saw that against the Rockets. Didn't mean to hit my keyboard there. Oops. We saw that against the Houston Rockets where, you know, AD was able to get out in transition. The Lakers were able to get out and run much more than you would think for a team that that utilizes their size to that extent. Now, granted, against the Rockets, they did kind of deviate away from their, you know, big man approach with Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, but that took a couple games. Now, the main highlight that I want to talk about concerning the Lakers is LeBron James. And first things first, right? I have to preface this. LeBron is LeBron. Nobody else is LeBron. But I will make the claim, and I've made this claim before, that James Harden is the closest you get to LeBron James in today's NBA. And that's going to piss off some LeBron James fans because they're going to be like, Harden? LeBron? Hell no. But it's true. It really is. Because they're both complete offensive they basically are the offensive system for their respective teams, or they can be the entire offensive system for their respective teams. And I think there's only a couple other guys in the entire NBA who have shown that they can be the entire offensive system for their team. And I'm going to go and say it's Giannis, and I'm going to say it is Luka Doncic. And that's a combination of playmaking and facilitating, as well as being, you know, they're being able to get their own offensively. And those four guys are able to do that better than anybody else in the league. I think Steph Curry, you maybe could include in that conversation as well, but I still think that Steph, because of his play style, because of how often he does play off ball, his play style is still predicated on, you know, reliance of his teammates to get him those looks running off of screens and things of that nature. So he's not just a one-man wrecking crew. Could he be? I don't know. That was what I was kind of looking forward to with Golden State this past season before Steph broke his hand, was seeing the, you know, quote-unquote unleashed Steph Curry, where he was going to play without Klay and he was going to have to basically be the entire offense for Golden State at the start of this season. And then we didn't get to see that, unfortunately, because the old argument between do you take Steph, do you take Harden, has always been, well, you know, Steph can't carry the same load that James Harden has because he's never had to. And so this was going to be an interesting year to see that. But I'm kind of going off on a tangent now. So basically, with LeBron, what we're seeing, and we see this all the time with him, is he attacks the game so many different ways. Whether it's straight up ISOs at the top of the key, whether it's operating out of the high post, the low post, whether it's screen and roll, whether he's the ball handler in a screen and roll, whether he's the screener, he attacks the game from so many different angles that it's so hard to find a way to stop him. Now, it's also hard to find a way to stop him because he's just LeBron James. And the same can be said for James Harden. When you play either of those guys straight up, they are unguardable. You have to throw multiple bodies at them to stop them. And even then, multiple bodies doesn't always work. But what we saw for so much of the playoffs with James Harden is we saw double teams being utilized effectively because of the reluctance of the Rockets to use James Harden anywhere else other than just as the primary ball handler, bringing the ball up the court and then, you know, initiating the offense. And I get it. He's your best player. The Rockets are at their best with the ball in James Harden's hands. Yes, but you can still put the ball in James Harden's hands and let him attack from different areas on the court. There were a handful of times in the OKC series as well as in the Lakers series where we saw James kind of operate out of that, you know, mid-post area, gets the ball down there and looks to facilitate out of that spot. And if he can't facilitate out of that spot, then he looks to, you know, drive it in to the teeth of the defense and, you know, get his floater up or just initiate the contact and get to the line. And I think that's a great system. And why I don't understand why we can't see more of that, more, you know, a bit more screen and roll action, or at least pick and pop action, something like that. Because what happens when it's just when the plan of attack, when option A is a James Harden isolation, that needs to be the bailout option to me. Similarly to the Kevin Durant Warriors, right? Where when you had KD on the Warriors, you also had Steph, you had Klay, you had this wrecking ball of a team where they had so many different options offensively. And their bailout play was usually a KD ISO. They would run their traditional motion offense for about 10 to, you know, 14, 16 seconds on the shot clock, and they would try to generate an open look for somebody through their, you know, their increased level of passing. Very similarly to the Miami Heat, who have the most passes of any team in the NBA playoffs. They pass the ball upwards of like 300 times a game. And I remember this from my discussion with Matt Bullard. So they play a very similar style to the Golden State Warriors and how they, you know, instigate a lot of passing, trying to generate those open looks. And it's all about generating those high efficiency looks. And some teams go about doing it different ways. The Rockets do it simply based on the gravity that James Harden and Russell Westbrook provide. But when it feels like the plan of attack is a James Harden ISO as the number one option, it throws things off. I think the James Harden ISO needs to be either like plan B or even plan C in the offense rather than the original plan of attack. Because what we're seeing, and we don't really see LeBron James do this, is when the double team comes and hits James Harden, if it's a random double team, if they do it randomly early in the shot clock, late in the shot clock, he never knows when it's coming. So that's an issue in and of itself. But when the double team does come, James is dishing the ball and then not getting back into the offense. And I think that it's just crazy to imagine your best player not being involved in the offense, being taken out of the game so easily. And I hear, you know, on social media, I see a lot of people saying, well, why aren't we putting more of the onus on the other four players on the court to be able to get something done? I mean, yes, they should be able to get something done. But in a world where your best player is James Harden and you ideally would like him taking the majority of shots in a basketball game, it doesn't make sense to allow him to be so easily taken out of the game. And that's one of the adjustments that I just could never wrap my head around, you know, with Mike D'Antoni as the head coach, is just allowing James Harden to say, you know what, it's fine, we'll take him out of the game. We're okay with playing that 4-on-3 advantage, even though it doesn't involve our best player. We're okay with that 4-on-3 advantage and allowing our other four guys to try and beat the other three Lakers guys or the other three OKC guys. And that never sat right with me. I'd like to see James, you know, be utilized a little bit differently offensively and not be taken out of the game so easily. And again, a lot of those looks that we see from LeBron James where he operates so many different ways, and specifically in this game, you know, Miami was throwing a lot of doubles at him with their zone coverage kind of when he was attacking from the top. And then when he started operating out of the low post, when they were throwing those doubles at him, he was able to make the right reads and get some open looks for, you know, easy, wide open threes for the Lakers. And so that's the thing, where if you're throwing the double team at the top, then it makes it easier for the defense to be able to cover those open three-point shooters. And especially in the Rockets offense, where there's a very minimal amount of off-ball action or cutting going on, it makes it completely easy to allow, you know, one defender to cover 2 3-point shooters, because you know neither of them are going to move. You know that those two guys are going to be planted there, not moving. And with the exception of, like, if you have James Harden at the top of the key, and then you've got, say, PJ Tucker in the left-hand corner, like, staring straight at the basket. So imagine this with me. James Harden, top of the key, PJ Tucker left-hand corner, and then Robert Covington in the left-hand slot, and there's, say, one defender guarding both of them. We'll say it's Kyle Kuzma, right? The way that the Lakers were doubling James is they would send that second defender, and then Kyle Kuzma would be responsible for guarding both Robert Covington and PJ Tucker. Now, instead of having either of those two guys cut to the basket to draw a defender in, specifically PJ Tucker, because if the corner man cuts into the basket, that defender has to make a choice. That defender, Kyle Kuzma, has to decide, okay, am I going to cover the cut to the basket, the backdoor cut, or am I going to stick with Robert Covington at the three-point line? And then James gets to choose that option. James gets to decide, okay, am I flipping this ball over to Covington for an open three, or am I, you know, doing a quick bounce pass down low to PJ Tucker, or a bullet pass to PJ Tucker as he's cutting in for a backdoor layup? And even better, you could put Russ in that corner, because Russ is a phenomenal cutter and he's a great finisher at the rim. So if you put Russ in that corner, then yeah, Kyle Kuzma is going to be forced to still guard both of those guys. But then, you know, the moment he takes his eyes off Russ, Russ can cut straight to the rim, catch that bullet pass from James, and rise up straight with it and either at least get to the line or finish at the cup. But instead, what we saw the Rockets offense do so many a time in the playoffs was just have Robert Covington as that guy in the slot kind of run over towards James and just be the outlet pass. And so James would have to just kind of loft the ball over the double team towards that player, and then he would have to try and reset the play and go get the ball back. Or there were occasional times where that did result in a three-point attempt, but the Lakers were so great about recovering defensively that we rarely saw that. They took the Rockets out of what they wanted to do, which was shoot volume threes. And that was the biggest thing, is the Lakers made the Rockets uncomfortable, and it's because they didn't adjust accordingly offensively to be able to stick to their game plan and what they wanted to do. So coming up, final segment here, where we will hear our very first ever, the inaugural voicemail message on Locked On Rockets. So we'll get there in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Traditional chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, whereas RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are always reliably low. They always offer the lowest possible prices, rather than changing around their prices based on what the market will bear, kinda like what airlines will do. You know, RockAuto.com is for everybody and doesn't require a membership or account login or anything like that. You just go to the website and boom, it's right there. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, the prices at RockAuto.com, as mentioned, they're always reliably low, and they're the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why? Why would you want to spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, this is the important part, be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Let's go ahead and dive straight into it. We are going to play back the first ever voicemail message. Well, it's not the first ever voicemail message. It's the first one being played on the show. There's been a handful so far, and I really appreciate this because I've listened to every single one so far. They're really engaging. You know, I'm just kind of picking and choosing where I want to plug them in and which topics I want to handle. So I really do appreciate you submitting those. If you'd like to submit your own, definitely try it out. 713-487-5457. But here we go. We're going to dive straight into this one from Eli.
What's up, Jackson? Thanks for setting up this phone call of mine. It's really great. Native Houstonian here. Name's Eli Schenker. I'm a third-year student at Arizona State. James Harden's on the line. You know, I called in today because I wanted to talk about the structure of the Rockets' offense and defense. Obviously, with the head coaching vacancy, that's up to change this offseason. And I know you've talked about this in the past on your show, but something I'm really looking forward to is the possibility of a little variance in our offense. You know, getting James Harden in the post a little bit, getting him going a little in the mid-range work like Kawhi does, giving him that mid, like, post pick-and-roll playmaking ability that we don't really get to see him anymore. He just really playmakes from the ice with ball, which, with one of the best playmakers and probably the best scorer in the league, and creates more gravity for his teammates than pretty any much else outside of Steph. I think that giving him that opportunity would far increase his output and probably our output in the playoffs, particularly because of the difference in our shooting and where we're shooting the ball from, rather than it being only threes, layups, and free throws like we do in the regular season. On defense, like, I like the switch everything approach, but I prefer to have a drop big that we could have and still run a switch everything approach, because personally, I've seen a lot of zone being used in the playoffs this year, particularly. It's like teams by the Heat, the Raptors, really locking up teams deep, especially. And I think that's something we could explore with our lineup and the players we have, so versatile and so, and usually small, on the smaller end with our players. I think it'd be great to try out zone. So finding a coach that would be able to explore different things on offense and defense would be huge. I don't know who that is, but I'm looking for those sorts of things about.
Excellent thoughts there from Eli, kind of highlighting some of the things that I was talking about there in segment two. And, you know, I share a lot of those same sentiments, you know, and my biggest thing is every time that I've ever mentioned the, you know, getting James Harden to operate out of the mid-range a little bit more, it's never been with the, you know, express intent of, I want James Harden to become, you know, the next Chris Paul. I want him to, you know, shoot all of his shots from mid-range. No, that's never been the case. I just want him to take what the defense gives him. And at times when the defense is taking away the three ball, or when they are dropping their bigs and when they're taking away everything right at the rim, it's so easy to game plan against the Rockets because they leave so much of the court untouched in that mid-range area. And, you know, talking about, you know, getting into the idea of, you know, a little bit more, you know, flexibility both offensively and defensively, that's, I completely agree right there with you, Eli. It's, you know, looking at a potential head coach that can come in and just be flexible. Somebody that can understand that there can be, you know, in-game adjustments. You can play one style, you can play a little bit of zone here, then you can play a little bit of man here, you can play a little bit of drop coverage here, and you can use those different looks defensively to really flummox a team over the course of a game. That's what we saw the Lakers do to the Rockets. They didn't stick to one defensive game plan. The Heat throughout the playoffs, they haven't stuck to one defensive game plan. They've instituted a variety of different defenses, and it does come down to personnel. So I will say that, you know, do the Rockets have the right personnel to be able to make some of those changes? Well, currently right now they don't have a big, right? So that's the biggest issue, is you can't play drop coverage with a big if you don't have a big in the first place. So getting a guy, you know, we've talked about, you know, potential addition of a guy like maybe Miles Turner or Al Horford or somebody like that, utilizing that Eric Gordon contract to, you know, kind of fix the Rockets front court issues, but also adding a player that can still play that five out spacing offensively while kind of helping to maybe anchor the defense a bit more and still have somebody who is maybe not the best as far as a you know, the switch everything scheme, but somebody who can be that kind of drop big that we saw that level of coverage from Clint Capela earlier this season, where the Rockets did still use the switching scheme, but they opted to drop Clint Capela back to the basket. I think that is a really great defensive scheme, because the switching really does take opposing teams out of what they want to do. By switching everything and by having competent defenders, at least positions 1 through 4, who can guard multiple positions and not be giving up, you know, an obscene amount of, you know, either height or strength or size, whatever. Those kinds of defenders, and for the most part, the Rockets do have that. Russell Westbrook is one of the biggest guards in the NBA. He doesn't give up a lot of size. He gives up some height, but he doesn't give up a lot of size or strength when he switches onto a bigger player. James Harden, same thing. And then their wings, you know, Daniel House, Robert Covington, PJ Tucker, all very adept at switching positions, you know, essentially 1 through 5, although we know that Robert Covington's had some struggles on ball. But I'm in complete agreement. I think that it's all about flexibility. It's all about seeing, you know, what works best and being willing to pivot from okay, we play this kind of way, but against this team, we need to be able to play this kind of way. And it's about having that mentality at the helm, at the head coaching position, to be able to notice the shift, to say, hey, we're playing this kind of way right now, and it's not working. We're playing this style either offensively or defensively. This has been what's, you know, won us games against other teams, but it's not going to win. It's not going to win for us against this team. And that's what we saw Frank Vogel do. Frank Vogel, the Lakers had the best record in the entire NBA this season, and they did it on the backs of Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and Anthony Davis, you know, all playing big, right, for the entire season. And then they get up against the Houston Rockets, and Frank Vogel decides, you know what? Yeah, this got us here, but this isn't going to win us this series. And so he benched JaVale and Dwight. That takes balls as a head coach. So legitimately, it's going to need to be whoever the Rockets bring in as their head coach needs to be somebody that's willing to take those risks, to make those adjustments, and to try and be flexible both offensively and defensively to find the best way for this team to win games. So I think that's going to be where we wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.